No April Fool's joke here. Market reacting well to the inflation data on Friday. What sectors will benefit? What sectors won't? Will we get a little bit more separation? Tracy Roniak, 8:35. Is this a good day to talk value stocks or what? It's Monday. It's pre-market prep. We got a whole week in front of us. Jobs data on Friday. Let's get it started.
Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, good morning, traders and investors. You see what we got on the screen. We're up nearly 15 handles, and a majority of that was done in the first 5 minutes of that 6 p.m. opening on Sunday night. The buck up a couple pennies above 104, 104.30. Bonds down a half a point, diverging from the IOM here, under 120 IOM, IWM. Crude down 34 cents at 82.83. Gold continuing to bust out, up 28.30 at 22.67. Silver back over 25. That's up to 25 cents at 25.08. And Bitcoin futures, they're in the red by $1,425. We're not going to talk about sports, but we are going to talk about Dennis's Easter egg hunt.
If I come on the stage. Yes. Yes. Lots of fun Easter egg hunting. Got two young kids. Oh, yeah, they do a little bit of Easter egg hunting in the morning. What about you, Joel? You do Easter egg hunts for your girls anymore? They get a little too big for that.
Well, Dennis, as you have known me for the past 100 years, don't really celebrate Easter.
Oh, but, that's true. Yeah, why can't you do Easter eggs, though?
Well, listen.
Okay, go.
I did an Easter egg hunt yesterday.
So you did?
Yeah. You know, Dana's husband, Garrett, his mom was so nice to invite us over for an Easter brunch. And she surprised us, yeah. Well, I was kind of lackadaisical, you know, I got last place in the Easter egg hunt. But it was fun. We had the traditional meals, and here we are. I'm not going to talk sports. We'll talk about sports at the end of Michigan hockey.
Talk about the upsets and the madness. Bring a beer in here, though.
Just one more thing, Dennis, before I forget. You got to look. Michigan hockey, we're in the Frozen Four, and you got to see Michigan's last goal, okay? Even you couldn't do the pass. Even your boy, what's his name? McDavid Connor. Even he couldn't.
Yeah, McDavid Connor.
He wouldn't have did anything like this. Yeah. No, definitely not. This is above McDavid's league, this Frozen Four Michigan. Who is the player? Do you know what the player's name is?
Nazer, N-A-Z-R. You'll find it. But let's get the show on the road. The market wanted good data. They wanted Powell to speak nicely. And Aaron, give us that inflation data from Friday.
Yeah, so last Friday, of course, we talked about it coming in when the market was closed. A little atypical, but you had the PCE index for February came in at 0.3%. Estimates were for 0.4%. It was 0.4% in January, so it went down 0.1% month over month. PCE year over year came in at 2.5%. That was in line. Core PCE came in at 2.8%. That was in line as well. So you basically had the number come in slightly cool by 0.1% on one metric, and then the rest just came in line, which the market's saying, hey, that's good enough for us because it wasn't hot. And that's like, you know, all we were looking for was that inflation, it looks like, you know, maybe isn't coming down again as quickly as we would have hoped or as quickly as it was at one point. But it is starting to level out or showing signs of slowing down as opposed to heating up again. So the market is responding well to that. Over the weekend, you had gold continue to do well. Bitcoin went back above 70,000, now back below 70,000. But either way, I mean, you know, title for today's show, it's a new quarter, but the same story so far. I mean, things are looking well for the first day of the quarter.
Yeah, we are leaking here a little bit, Joel. I mean, if we want to try to, you know, find, you know, something to lean on if you're bearish here. Overnight, we were up substantially. We started to leak a little bit. Now we're starting to come back here a little bit in the last few minutes. So we're bouncing around here a little bit right now. But, I mean, we're looking here on these ticks again. Remember, the ticks that you're just seeing right now are non-existent. So SPY is actually only up $1.43 here right now. So we've given back, what, about 10 handles since the high, Joel?
Yeah, actually, I was just looking because I was not around for that 6 p.m. open, and that was not smart. But look at the move. Really, a majority of the move, this is a two-minute chart. So the algos were just, boom, we had a wild close on Thursday. I don't know if there were big imbalances across the board. I'm sure you
saw. End of the quarter.
Yeah, end of the quarter. There were sellers. And you shot up that this is 2 minute bars here. So basically you had a 10 point rally in 2 minutes. So if you were late to the game on that, and then, you know, you had some follow through the high, but we'll go longer term because that's what we like to do. We'll go all the way to the 30.
We're getting hit right now. In the last 10 minutes, we're just starting to get hit here. And I don't know if we've got some other news that's come out here in the last few minutes. I haven't seen anything, but we are leaking. So the overnight traders, I know. The overnight traders here, very, very excited, obviously. You know, Robinhood last night, they're bidding the market up. It's like, yeah, party time, inflation, CPI data is good. The institutional traders get to their desk right now, and they're still taking some profits, it looks like here. So, you know, as more and more roll in here, we are seeing a little bit of profit taking. We're up 30 handles overnight. We're only up 10 here now. So quietly giving back a lot of this pre-market gain.
Let's get into some of our headlines today.
Before we go to the headlines, let's recap the quarter because this quarter was, something special for a lot of stocks. I got the top 10 stocks for the S&P 500 here. Do you know what number one is?
S&P 500, you said?
S&P 500. So we're talking Nvidia. The S&P 500, the top stock in the S&P 500.
Nvidia.
That's number two. Joel, you gotta go. You guys know number one. I owned them both, and I talked
SMCI.
About both.
SMCI.
They were both in my acronym, so I got one answer in my acronym.
Not in the S&P 500, or now.
Yeah, I know it is. It was added, it was officially added. It wasn't at the beginning of the quarter, but it was added during the quarter. Okay. So I guess you're right. You could say, well, it wasn't in there to start, but. And when you're looking at the S&P 500 at quarter end here,
but
it is
in
there.
For the majority of SMCI's move, it wasn't, because that's what I thought initially. But then I was like, wait a second, that wasn't in. But it counts because it got added in the first quarter. So SMCI won.
So it closes the quarter in the S&P 500. So if you're looking at the stocks that are in there. So I'll give you the list. Top 10. First, SMCI was up 255%. Not a bad haul there. NVIDIA was up 82%. So that was my NASA acronym. I had both of those stocks in there. AMD didn't make the cut, though, and Amgen definitely didn't make the cut, so the two weren't that great, but AMD was okay. Constellation Energy, number three, CEG.
Really?
From the S&P 500. Yeah, just sneaky Constellation Energy. Stock, you know, look at the chart on that one. Not a one stock we give a lot of love to, but man, it's been moving higher. Number four was Deckers, DECK.
Relentless.
Yep. Number five, Micron. Relentless, too. Micron had the good quarter. Popping. And then number six, Joel, one of the old favorites, General Electric. Out of 500 companies, GE was number six. Number seven was Meta. Meta just continues to roll after having such a fantastic year. It was, again, one of the best stocks of the first quarter. Marathon Petroleum, MPC. So you get some oil stocks that are making, you know, looking in there. And that's just, you know, what we're at here. You get some oil stocks. Oil's come back quite a bit from those lows. It was a pretty good quarter for some commodities. A lot of things pretty diversified is what I'm trying to get at.
Nice. Yeah.
Number nine, the House of Mouse is back. It was the ninth best performer of your S&P 500, Disney, 35.52%. And then the story just continues for Eli Lilly. It was number 10, up 33% for the quarter. Unbelievable that stock has been. So that's your top 10. SMCI, NVIDIA leading the way, but Disney and General Electric making an appearance here. And then a couple oil names, a couple, you know, and then you got Deckers, the retail name. It got a diversified list of pharmaceutical in there. So all the bears that are saying it's just been NVIDIA, well, there's been a lot of other stocks that have moving up here too.
Wow. Yeah. Go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think to your point, Dennis, there were a lot of people making it out to be, oh, the breadth is so weak, it's so weak. But then when you actually look at it, I mean, there were a lot of days where you looked at the S&P 500 and like more than 450 of the stocks were up. And you can't, you know, I mean, just looking at it, it's like, okay, yes, you have the clear leaders in the chip stocks, in the semiconductors, but to act like it was just NVIDIA carrying. And I mean, when we were talking about the Magnificent Seven, it seemed like every single day carrying the market. But then for the past month or so, the Magnificent Seven, they haven't even been trading together. There have been days where, you know, we talked about this a lot too, where NVIDIA's up, Apple's down, or Meta's up and Microsoft's down. So the fact that the Magnificent Seven stocks aren't even just moving together, I mean, shows you that there is breadth in the market right now.
I think so. You are seeing breadth. Now, that doesn't mean we're going in here and we're just chasing and buying everything at will. It's just showing that this market rally is kind of for real. And if we see the setup, you're not saying it's going to be an awesome quarter. We've had a pretty strong quarter. Sometimes you can have a weak quarter. But I think you're buying dips. And the reason is why is we still have the setup that, hey, Powell's saying we're cutting rates this year. When you start cutting rates, it's usually good for stocks. And it's maybe good for all those stocks that haven't been performing that well. I mean, IWM is sitting here near a 52-week high, very near a 52-week high. Obviously underperformed massively, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, still down, way down from the all-time high, which is up at 244, but there's life there. And it kind of makes sense when you just stop and think logically about it. It kind of makes sense. If we're going to go into an environment coming in the next few months where we actually start lowering rates, all those stocks that are interest rate sensitive are the ones that are probably going to play the catch-up trade. And if you think the market looks out 3 to 6 months, they're going to start buying them sooner than later. And that's what's happening here too. I mean, we've talked about how bad solar has been, but you know what? It sets up not bad here right now. If you look at the TAN, technically speaking here, Joel, you know, you could look at that bottom, you know, right, or the top right chart, whichever one you look at, the 90 day or the longer one. I like to, you know, when I bring up a chart, I like to first look at the 90 day. Don't look at the intraday stuff. When you're making a position trade, it's just a lot of noise there. No. But look at like the 90 day. What's it done? Is it setting up? Is it consolidating? Is it starting to go? I mean, the TAN's starting to look like it's decided, you know, it's got some seller exhaustion, making a stand down there at 40, 41, 42, lots of lows in that area. Now we're starting to lift up here a little bit. So am I chasing? I don't know if you need to. I don't think it is a chase here. You know, maybe you're starting to position yourself just for the back half of this year to be in some of those laggards. Maybe the laggard trade actually starts to work.
These look like Kenny Glick charts. You know, kind of like, you know, beaten down.
He likes those. Yeah. And then it starts to turn. Yeah.
Right. But the TAN.
Warlock. Warlock had a great call last week, too.
Yeah.
Which one was that?
It came back in.
It did. It did pop, though. That one's moving. He gets in and out. He's fast. The Warlock knows how to trade.
The TAN does look interesting from from this bottom right chart is the weekly perspective. I mean, you know, the highs are kind of jagged, right? So if you're looking for your next target, it's still a couple bucks away. I mean, the individual stocks, I mean, SEDG, I mean, you're not too far from the low of the move. If you want to strike now, man, consolidating near the low of the move. First Solar has always been one that seems to kind of lead the charge. That did on Thursday. Not a bad day on Friday. That's again SEDG. What are some of the SPWR?
That's done. SPWR is pretty much done. I mean, it could come back, but it's $3 here now. You're talking. There's a few of them out there that look like they're like going the way of the Fiskers, you know, with all the price cuts and off the board. I mean, SunPower, maybe that's one, though. You know, if you think interest rates, maybe it gets that pop from 3 to 5. You know, maybe you can get that big move there, but that's speculative. When you start getting these $3 stocks, you're in speculation like mode. And did you know SunPower? That was one of my best stocks of 2020. I had a large size position in it from $5 and it went to 50. And I rarely do that. I took that stock from 5 and sold the whole thing at 51. I was like, I made 1,000% on that thing. And rarely do I, hold almost the entire position. I don't even think I scaled out of it. But 2020 was a special year. There was just so much going on. I wasn't even really paying attention to it that much because when I originally bought it, it wasn't a huge position. You know, it was a speculative position, and then it just kept going and going and going. And I was like looking at this thing at like 35 or 40. I was like, when did that thing go up that much from 5 to 35 to 40? And obviously 2020 was a special year for a lot of people just because everything was going up. But here it is. It's fully come back all the way down. Telling you, sometimes, you know, these smaller speculative names, sell your peanuts while the circus is in town. Harlan Pyon.
What about your Canadian solar too here? Boom, boom. You got any
Canadian solar?
There?
That is that even a solar company in Canada? They call themselves.
Yeah,
Canadian
someone
solar.
Said that, and I just
I'm not even
it
sure they're headquartered in Canada. I'm going to check right now. Canadian
it says it's
solars,
a Canadian solar power
solar
provider.
Headquarters. Oh yeah, they are. They're in Guelph. It is. They're in Guelph.
Guelph.
Guelph. Great Canadian city, Guelph.
That's east of Toronto, right?
It would be west. West of Toronto.
Okay, yeah. There's my Canadian.
It's on the way to Toronto. So you actually pass through Guelph. When you go from Michigan up to Toronto, you'd be passing through just the bottom of Guelph.
Oh, west. I should have said west because I remember seeing it on the old triptych when we used to do that. Okay. All right. So solar, what else? I mean, you know, the IWM, that's busting out. That's had a couple good days. Limited monthly resistance in there. You know what else kind of is like joining the party now? I mean, we could talk about this more with Tracy, but look at some of these financials. I mean, you know, they're perking up too. Lower interest rates. It's good.
It's going to help them. The banks need it. The KRE needs it. I mean, the KRE is looking like it. It's believing the story. I mean, we've got a different story happening here in the last couple of weeks. It isn't just AI, boom, NVIDIA ripping higher every day and just carrying everything. NVIDIA stalled out. Microsoft has stalled out. Apple has obviously, you know, stalled and has just got its issues. And we know that already too. But I mean, when you look back here at, you know, what's really helped the last couple of weeks or even the last 6-7 days, everything else is starting to catch up here again. And the banks are doing pretty good. I mean, Bank of America, 52-week high. Goldman Sachs, 420 this morning. I mean, back up to 420. You're right near the all-time highs. Ooh. It's taken us 2 years to get back here, but we've gotten all the way back here. Joel, am I diversified, as Kramer would say? I would say this market is.
It is, and what's everyone's been complaining about. Quick side story tangent. At the gym over the weekend, I'm talking to my buddy, and he's talking to someone else, and they were talking about banks and bank stocks. And I knew, you know, immediately that they were talking about Flagstar, you know, NYCB and stuff. And they're having the conversation. I just hop in real quick. I'm like, yeah, they got way too cocky, you know, buying that Signature Bank assets. They thought that they were, you know, it was a home run with it. And my one buddy goes, yeah, this guy, yeah, he's on the board at NYCB Flagstar. And I'm like, I'm like, okay, sorry about that.
Oops, foot in mouth. Joel's done that a few times.
Yeah,
I do it all the time. Don't worry, Joel. I put my foot in my mouth almost every day.
Yeah, but well, let's just look KRE. KRE perking up too.
Yeah, I'm sure he appreciated at least that you know, displayed that you had some knowledge on the subject talking about it, because I'm sure he's heard some people that just see it on the news and then talk about it without even knowing what's going on. But yeah, I mean, when you see financials and energy trading higher, typically that happens when the economy, you know, when there's not a lot of recession fears, the economy is doing well. So it's tough because it's kind of on the flip side. I mean, you know, we got good PCE data, but then like I'm looking at gas prices. I filled up over the weekend back above $4 a gallon for the first time, I want to say, in like a year and a half. So, I mean, the energy prices going higher. I mean, it goes against, I guess, inflation falling. Same thing with the economy heating up. But yeah, I mean, the KRE is the real interesting opportunity here in the financial sector, because if, you know, we do avoid any type of economic slowdown, whatever, then you'd have to assume these small banks start to perform better. Maybe we're a little bit past the NYCB Flagstar stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. I want to take a stab at the KRE, but I'm still a little bit scared because I feel like a lot of these banks do still have exposure in the commercial real estate. That could not be great over the next year or so.
What derails everything we just said is if inflation actually starts to tick higher. That derails it all. So, you know, you're worried about your gas prices are going higher. I mean, if you start seeing inflation creep back in, everything changes, because this market is now banking these stocks specifically, not NVIDIA's as much, like they're going to win no matter what, But I mean, you look at the KRE, what we just talked about, and the TAN, and obviously the IWM. And if we see inflation start to creep back into this market, we are going to see those trades come off hard. So that's the wild card. That's what can happen. So if you believe inflation is over, it's probably green light go for those stocks. If you think inflation's going to creep back and Powell's going to change his mind, which they are entitled to change their mind, if they start seeing inflation tick higher, they will not lower rates. So to your point, Aaron, we cannot see that happen if you're going to buy those stocks. But right now, from what Powell is saying, from the stats that we're getting, inflation seems to have cooled off substantially. These stocks have lagged. They're starting to perk up here because this market's starting to think, well, you know what? We didn't get that interest rate cut in March. Well, March has passed us now. And now we're looking at May, maybe June, and it's only 2 months away. Hey, maybe we start buying these stocks. That's what the market is saying.
Yeah, and I did see a headline. Someone from Canaccord, one of their like chief strategists, was saying, let me get the exact wording so I don't screw it up. He said, I'm not saying they have to go back to zero, talking about interest rates, but they have to be more aggressive. The firm's chief market strategist told CNBC's Fast Money on Thursday. One of the most aggressive topics that I talk to clients about is how bad the incoming data is. And he's talking about labor data and saying basically the Fed's, you know, metrics for looking at labor data is, you know, lagging and it's not great. And they're looking at stuff that's showing that the job market is slowing down. So if that's the case, that should help, you know, cool inflation a little bit. If the labor market's not as hot, and I know I saw some people in the chat talking about jobs as well, we will get jobs data later this week, non-farm payrolls on Friday. So that will be, you know, a big market mover. I mean, at least this week we got big data coming out on a day where the market's open, right? So we can actually trade. Yeah. We can see the market reaction. But that will be your kind of, you know, that's going to be what makes the Fed either cut or not cut. If people are losing their jobs all of a sudden, or hiring is grinding to a halt, then the Fed's going to be more likely to cut, even if inflation doesn't get back to that 2% that we want to see. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here. You know, while we're talking about inflation, remember when, you know, the egg prices were the big thing everyone was talking about with inflation?
That never happened in Canada either. The eggs never really changed price over here.
Really?
That was like a U.S. phenomenon.
Well, part of it was because there was a big like bird flu that killed, you know, a bunch of chickens, and people didn't really talk about that as much. They weren't, you know, they just wanted to talk about the inflation aspect of it. But the new one, I don't know if you guys have seen this, is cocoa. Cocoa price.
Oh yeah. Cocoa.
I mean, the commodity. Yep. If you look, I don't know if we can look at a chart of that or if there's any.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, over 10,000 a ton or something. Yeah.
Look at this chart. I mean, this is insane. But again, this is from some like supply chain issues. There's shortages. Which, when I was reading about this over the weekend, it reminded me. I remember like 5 to 10 years ago, like reading a headline basically saying like, cocoa, you know, there's going to be a big shortage of chocolate. The prices are going to go insane. And then it's like one of those things you read and then it never happens. And then now 5, 10 years down the road, it finally happened. And I'm like, oh God, you know, I read about this. But I don't know if there's any trades out there if we want to short or go.
Oh, wait a second.
Aaron's had a trade.
Is it cocoa probably like the greatest short ever now? This is not investment advice. Why? Because of Ozempic and all these drugs. People are not going to want to eat chocolate.
I think they're going to take the drugs and eat more chocolate. But I'm of that, you know, opinion,
you know,
there. That
I'm telling you, and we're not going to go into
the people are going to be like, why in the hell am I going to exercise and eat healthy? I just take this shot in my stomach and I lose weight no matter what. Bring on these drugs.
That's not true. There's going to I'm not long or short any of these stocks, but the data is showing that people are requiring higher and higher doses, okay? And they are, you have to change your diet. You still have to change your diet. You still have to adjust what you're eating.
Well, why take the shot if you have to change your diet and exercise anyways? I mean, you can lose weight.
Because you want to be healthy.
Newsflash. You lose, when you change your diet and actually exercise, you lose weight. It's just a math formula. Calories in, calories out. It's all just math. Weight loss is just math. So why, you know, if you're just going to exercise, do all that, why take the shot? I think people are going to take this shot because they don't want to exercise. I don't know if the chat's with me, but I think that's going to happen. I think people don't want to change their, and this is the alternative where I can continue to live the lifestyle I like and still lose weight. I think that's the point to it. They're not going to say that. They're not going to say that on like on the, obviously when you're taking these shots and you read the fine print, it's going to say diet and exercise and all that. But I can guarantee you there are some people probably not changing their diet and not exercising more and just taking the shot as they feel like this is the easy way out.
Gaining weight or plateauing and gaining weight. And then also you can only take a maximum dose. There's also a point where you can get to the maximum dose. And then after that,
I'm not saying it's the right way to do it. I'm just saying there is going to be a portion of the population that is not going to change. I guarantee you there are some people out here who are doing the shot and probably not exercising more and probably not changing their diet.
And those people will lose the weight. They will lose the weight and then they will put it back on.
Maybe. Eventually. Or maybe they just continue to take the shot and maybe they don't. I don't know. I'm not saying this is the way to do it. What I'm arguing is I don't know if this is necessarily bad for Hershey. I don't know. That was the original argument. You were arguing that don't buy Hershey's or cocoa because everybody's going to these weight loss programs. I've seen this before, you know, New Year's resolutions. It's January. The Hershey trade always goes south in January because everybody's going to go to the gym. They're going to eat healthy. And then by week three, they can't take it anymore.
Well,
what did Barron say on this? Barron talked about Hershey's. What did they say?
They agree with you. I didn't read the article, but it says Hershey's shares are a sweet buy. Right there. Boom. That's what it says. I didn't read the whole article, but we'll see. I mean, it takes time, right? I mean, how long have these drugs been out? You got to see the data. What's that in the background?
Somebody got their mic on.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and fix that real quick. Let me hop
Who's
off.
That? Who's that? I'm going to yell.
Who has given us background noise?
Luke just hopped in the office. I think one of the other mics in the office is on. Let me fix that real
quick.
You're
getting the back. Yeah, you're getting the back.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's see. Let's just take a look at the Hershey's chart after this.
I didn't look at the chart yet. It started during the baby. It isn't necessarily bad for Hershey. So it is up trading this morning, probably because Barron's gave it some love. But I mean, to your point, Joel, this trade has kind of worked. Hershey's was $276, now down at $194. Now maybe.
Thank you very much.
So far, this trade has worked for you. But maybe this is a turnaround. So I'm not buying Hershey's. Full disclosure, I'm not in Hershey's. I don't plan to buy Hershey's. I haven't even actually looked at this. Maybe I will now. Let's go look at her trusty Benzinga Pro. We go into her details. We go to Hershey's. We got a 2.8% dividend, which is something. Not, you know, like it was when we were in 0% environment. PE is 20. Forward PE is 20. So not super expensive. Consumer staples typically trade somewhere, sometimes up to 24 to 26. So it's actually probably on the cheaper side of a consumer staple. So from a valuation perspective, it's kind of not bad. Not great. A little bit above a market multiple, but consumer staples, but not bad. So that's, you know, your fundamental outlook. Technically speaking, we throw that to Joel. What do you think of the technicals? Because you just talked about all this from a fundamental perspective.
You can lead on 180. You can lead on the 180 low. I mean, if you're a long-term investor, you take the bottoms in and you believe in Barron's and you're a long-term investor, even if you're buying it at 196 here, you know, you lean on the monthly lows. You got two monthly lows at 180. I mean, if you think this thing's going back to 250, 260, 270, then, then it's a good long-term buy. You broke a long-term monthly losing streak, right? Let's see. Give it another month. You had an up month last month. And, you know, once it gets going here, you had these green candles. So, you know, technically you have a level to lean on. I should have read the, if I would have known, I should have read the entire article. But this is not an endorsement for Weight Watchers at all. But, you know, it's, if you're going to, if you're going to change.
Weight Watchers needs an endorsement of some type, Joel.
Yeah.
Do you see where Weight Watchers is? So I think you're here. Weight Watchers, this is like you got these shots coming. It hurts Weight Watchers a hell of a lot more than it hurts Hershey.
Well,
I'm going to say that. A hell of a lot more.
Weight Watchers got a bump after, you know, the weight loss drugs, because they announced that people would be able, I guess they have some sort of, you know, through its app, you could get prescribed the drugs, the weight loss drugs through it. So it got a bump
whatever bump that was, it didn't last long.
Gone now, and Oprah's gone. You know, she's
it's a buck 85. Is Oprah out? Is she
officially
off
the board? She's out. Oprah's out. Yeah.
Weight
Watchers, sorry to say, but if you're a shareholder, this feels like it's going the way of Fisker.
Yeah.
We're gonna make Fisker a verb. It looks like it's getting Fiskered there.
Real quick before I move on from the weight loss drugs and whatnot. Also, first of all, at Hershey, I was gonna mention friend of Benzinga, Edwin Dorsey, who runs the Bear Cave, does short reports, had a short report out on Hershey's. Had nothing to do with Ozempic or anything like that, but because Mr. Beast, this YouTuber that has, I mean, Dennis, your kids might watch Mr.
Beast. Oh, yeah, they love videos. Mr. Beast. I like Mr. Beast, too. We said that before. I like Mr. Beast.
Yeah, but he has his own brand of chocolate now called...
Beastables.
Beastables. Thank you. and you can buy them now at, like, any place, and apparently kids are all going... You know, it's like the kids want the Prime drinks. They want the Mr. Beast chocolate. So Dorsey's short thesis was that, you know, this guy is so big. This YouTuber is so big that his chocolate will actually have a meaningful impact on Hershey's market share. I mean, I like a lot of Dorsey's work. This one I wasn't like, you know, because Hershey's is just so big. I mean, how many different kinds of chocolate bars have there been that come out in 20 years? I mean, it's like Hershey's will probably be fine long term. But now, I mean, this has got to be good timing for him because he put a short report out with one thesis, and then all of a sudden cocoa prices rise up. So now if a Hershey's bar goes up to $3.50 instead of $2, there's probably going to be fewer people buying them. So that could actually be one that's been one that's working out for Dorsey right now, but maybe not because of his initial thesis. But if it works, it works, right? The other thing I was going to mention, the one guy who doesn't need the Ozempic, whatever, I saw an article about this guy over the weekend. Do you guys remember Super Size Me? It came out in like the early 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
That was going to put the end of McDonald's. And that was the very bottom. McDonald's got down to $16 a share during that fiasco. And it's $281 now. Everybody thought McDonald's going out of business after that. They're like, I mean, McDonald's was worried. They were trying to turn around to get some healthy stuff out there, change the narrative. Nobody was ever going to eat at McDonald's again, AB.
Well, I was doing some research on it, and you know what McDonald's did, which this might be one of McDonald's worst investment decisions ever. You guys know what I'm talking about? In 2000, so at some point, McDonald's owned 90% of Chipotle.
Oh, yeah.
And sold it in 2006. And I think McDonald's at the time, after Supersize Me, was kind of trying to hedge, be like, okay, we're going to get into a healthier market. I don't know exactly why. I'm sure McDonald's had a good reason for selling Chipotle in 2006, and it's worked out for McDonald's. I mean, the stock's, you know, doing well. But if McDonald's still had that investment in Chipotle, I mean, oh, boy. I mean, Chipotle has grown so much in the past 18 years since then. But what I was going to say, sorry, I'm bouncing around a lot here. I don't know if you remember the guy they highlighted him in the Super Size movie, who's not the main guy, this guy, Don Gorski, a Wisconsin man. He just passed his 34,000th Big Mac this year. He's 70, he's 70 years old and still eats two Big Macs a day.
And he's fine.
He's skinny. He's like not that fat. He's he must not be eating that much outside the two Big Macs a day because he's, again, still alive, still skinny. I mean, this guy, I don't think McDonald's, like, you couldn't pay to have a better person be endorsing to be like, hey, look, this guy eats it every single day and he's still alive at 70 years old.
Bonds are dragging us down here, Dennis. You made that point when we came on the free market show.
Yep.
Look at the bonds are.
The bonds are tanking.
They're down almost a stick here. So they're not
the market red, I think. We are down here right now. Bitcoin's went red here too. This is gonna take the market down here, I think. So I mean we're still hanging. IWM's still hanging, but we got institutional money managers that are just getting their desk. They see TLT down $1, they're not coming in buying IWM. Tell you that right now. So I'm looking here. I think this is I think this market rally here is going to simmer out.
All right. Well, it is 8:35. Joel, who do we have joining us today?
Tracy Roniak, talking value stocks from Zacks Research. Let's go to Tracy. Okay. Good morning, Tracy. So that's
good morning.
Is that red or is that more of a pink?
You know, it's pink.
Okay.
Definitely.
But you know we don't wear red or green on this show. You know
I
that.
Know.
Or scarlet or gay or green and white. So, all right. You know, you've been very consistent with your calls over the years here. And let's just start with wrapping up the first quarter.
Yeah, it was quite a ride, right? I just heard you guys talking about how maybe this rally starting to look a little bit overextended. But is it? Every time I say that, and when it looks like the bulls are getting tired, seemingly the next session, they're off to the races again, and the S&P is hitting new highs again. So I'm not betting against it. I do feel like there is a lot of rotation right now into these other kind of value-oriented areas like energy, and even some of the banks have seen some rally. Not all of them, and it is still pick and choose on the bank side because people are still nervous about the banks, but even the banks are starting to see and join in on this rally.
Let's talk more specific. I mean, you've had this nice rally in oil and it's kind of been swept under the rug, right? Because of the whole AI trade, maybe not to warn, but talk about some of the other issues that you're on your radar and, see if the rallies can continue.
Yeah, energy's looking good here into the summer. So we have surpassed the $80 in the WTI now, and it seemingly is holding above the 80 range. Some of the analysts see 90 by the summer. That the 80-90 range is kind of like the golden area that you want WTI to be in. It's not too hot, it's not too cold, and the energy companies can make a ton of free cash flow in the 80s. They also can keep the regulators kind of off their backs, right? It's not going to pressure gasoline prices as much as once you get closer to $100. So they're not going to have all the outcry that we've seen in the past of, we need to tax some, why is it so high and all that. So it's kind of the perfect area for energy companies to be in. And we're seeing that with a lot of the M&A that's going on right now in energy. That's common in the bull markets in energy. And we are still in the bull market for energy. So the stocks are cheap here. Even after this nice run that they just had in March, they were the best performing sector in the S&P 500 in March. Yes, even outperforming, some of the AIs and whatnot. A couple are breaking out to new all-time highs, which is kind of incredible given where, the energy stocks have been. But Diamondback Energy, ticker FANG, the original FANG stock, is busting out to new all-time highs. It's still cheap at 11 times earnings. And I still see quite a bit of a run that will still be coming, not just this year, but in the next several years, because I do think we're still in the early innings of this energy trade. It's going to have fits and starts. We have crude back above 80, but we have that terrible sell down in natural gas where, if you were a gas play or even, 50% gas, why are you even drilling at those prices? But it's starting to rebound off of those levels now. So hopefully the worst is in the rearview mirror with the gassy type of plays. A couple of them did have to cut, at least a comm stock cut its dividend just temporarily, hopefully, because of the plunge in the price. But we had a mild winter globally, so that really hit the price, which is a good thing for the consumer. And the global economy, really, but not so great for the energy companies.
So, Tracy, if you're saying if oil stays, in the $80 range, that doesn't mean there's going to be like a defined ceiling for these energy stocks, that they're still going to be able to, make a bunch of money, increase dividends, do well. It's not like, they don't need to go to $100 a barrel in order to make new all-time highs.
No, $100 is, that's a lot of free cash flow that we've seen in the recent years, when the Ukraine war hit and the oil prices spiked. But anything for many of them, anything over $40 is profitable. Certainly over $60 free cash flow is looking really good. But $80, yes, It'll go to the variable dividend. They'll maybe start in a year or two spending a little bit more on CapEx, depending on the company.
Okay.
In the early stages, so they're still holding back on the CapEx side.
Is it almost better for them being at A because there's like less uncertainty? If it's at 100, that probably means there's something going on driving the prices so high. Then there's all this like overhead uncertainty.
Right, correct. You don't want it to go there. The energy companies themselves don't want $100 oil just because of the volatility, the uncertainty, as you said, and just the regulatory reaction, the governmental reaction when it gets that high. They want to kind of stay out of the limelight, just do their thing, pay the standard dividends and the variables to their shareholders, and be out there trying to drill for new oil. You know, a couple of the key areas now are in Guyana and Suriname, which is they're right next door to each other. And those are looking like, areas that are going to be the next bull driver for this energy market, and a lot of opportunity down there. All of the big oils, well, Chevron's trying to get in there. They're not in there yet, but you have Total Energy is in partnership with APA down there in Suriname. And then you have Exxon, Hess, and the Chinese are in Guyana. And then Chevron's trying to get into Guyana, but I'm not sure if they're going to succeed there. So yeah, there's a lot going on, but the stocks are still dirt cheap here.
Got it. Well, let's move from energy to financials. I mean, we're seeing kind of the big boys are doing well, whether you're looking at JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, KRE still a little beaten down, the regional names. What opportunities, what trends do you see in the financial space?
Yeah, as you mentioned, everybody's going to the safety of the JP Morgans and Bank of Americas of the world, and understandably so. They're not they're too big to fail. So they're not going anywhere. So if you want just kind of a stable big cap play in the banks, that's where you can go. Also, keep in mind, their business is more diverse. They have a lot of investment banking, especially JP Morgan. And that's starting to pick up again. We're starting to see some of those IPOs. We are seeing a little bit more M&A now happening, not just on energy, but a few other places it's starting to pick up. Those are all going to be bullish for a company like JP Morgan, because that part of their business has been real depressed over the last 2 years. So you start getting that side, the investment banking side, humming on JP Morgan, and you're going to like what you see with the earnings going on there. Now, the regionals, a little bit different, not as much of the investment banking, if any, on the regionals. Then we know the CRE story going on there. So you are going to have to be a little bit choosy on where you're going in, and you really have to know where your bank is invested and where they're getting their earnings. And some of these banks, though, had record years last year and nobody cared. They had record earnings, like Bank OZK, which I own in the value investor portfolio at Saks and in my own portfolio for years. It's gone nowhere. You feel real pathetic owning it when the AI.
Which one's that, Tracy? Which one's that?
It's Bank OZK.
Oh, Bank of the Ozarks.
Yeah, okay. It's the real estate bank, but they're on the development side. So people get real nervous when they look at what it is they do, and they're like, oh, that real estate. No, I don't want to be in there. But they loan out to the developers to go build the apartment building. They do have some for the commercial side, but it's not as big. It's mostly apartments and condos. And so that can get a little bit dicey too, because it is on the development side. But once the building is up, that loan is sold. They're not in it for years and years like the other people are in the CRE. So again, they had record year last year. They were able to lend out pretty consistently considering what's going on with the interest rates. And yeah, things look pretty good for them. They've always been known as a growth bank since the early 2000s. And that's kind of hurt them in the recent couple of years. But that also means their dividend yield has really jumped up because the stock has gone nowhere. And they've never paid a big dividend, but they are paying over 3% right now.
So. What about one that it sounds like it might be up your alley? I've been in this one, Cullen Frost down in Texas. They do a lot of lending and banking for the oil and gas companies down there. Are you familiar with that one, ticker CFR?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, I don't want to then maybe I'll ask you to look into this one and let me know what you think, because again, if energy companies are doing well and banks are starting to perk up, then a bank that does banking for energy companies could do well. I don't know. Again,
yes.
I've been in it, so it's one of those regional banks that has kind of a industry specific clientele.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you pick the right clientele, the right industry, it works out. It didn't work out, obviously, for Silicon Valley Bank because their clientele was all these high growth tech companies and those weren't doing great. But again, if oil and gas companies are doing well, I don't know the exact percentages of how much of Cullen Frost's, you know, clients are in that industry versus other ones, but I know they have a lot of exposure there.
Yeah, that's definitely something people need to keep in mind with any of these regional banks, because they are regional a lot of times, and they are in whatever is going on in their particular region is what's driving those earnings. And right now, as we were just talking about, and as you just put in good terms, when crude is at these levels, these banks do or these oil companies have great free cash flow. This is when you do want to be lending to them. There is a lot of M&A going on, although a lot of them are doing it with their stock, at least on the public side. Oil industry is very debt intensive. So there are a lot of banks that do specialize in it. And during the bad times, it's not so great. But I do think we're in another bull energy market. And so, yeah, I'm going to take a look at it because I'm always looking for these niche type of banks.
Yeah, well, I initially got in after because like all the regional banks got hammered on the Silicon Valley Bank, and I was like, well, not all of them have this much exposure to these high-tech growth companies. I was like, what's the furthest away you can get from that? Oil and gas companies down in Texas. So I started buying CFR. Yeah. It hasn't really done great, but again, they pay a dividend, so it's been okay. Joel, I'm a kick it.
That's when I picked up some Co-America, you know, for the same reason, down there in Texas, they're still pumping oil. One thing on the Bank of the Ozarks, we have, Nate Tobik on of, Oddball Stocks, a follow on Twitter. And he has been shorting Ozark over the years for the, you know, for the same reasons that you've been buying it. He felt about their overexposure to the real estate. But I got it. So everyone's going to fall asleep when I talk about the next sector here. But if we're talking about lower interest rates and we never talk about utilities. But I mean, if we're coming into a lower interest rate environment here, you're looking at, you know, the opposite. What moves with that? What is it? Utilities are just too darn boring for you.
It's too darn boring for me, even for me. Yeah. I'm still finding value in the hot growth sectors. So why should I, you know, divert from that plan over to the utilities? I don't see any reason to.
That pretty much says it all. So anything that you're looking at,
about gold, Tracy? Gold's making new all-time highs. Do you see any opportunities in gold? I mean, what is driving? Because like you said, I always see more interesting opportunities than gold. I mean, for me too, when I plan on buying something and holding it for 20 years, like I think like I can always find something that'll probably return me in that time frame something more than gold. I know gold might be safer, but I don't, it's too boring.
Yeah. Gold, you know, once it has these runs, and now that's seemingly in a bull market again as well. Usually you want to be in the miners because that is where the real growth will be in a true bull gold market. But the miners can be tricky too, because that's real businesses. Like you have employees, you have to go mine it. You have to get it out of the ground. And there's a lot that goes into play there. A lot of government issues, regulatory, then you have labor issues, but yeah, like it's, I don't know.
Higher rates, Tracy, too. Higher rates have hurt the miners in the last couple of years. I mean, it's got to be more expensive to pull that out, even though they're getting more as the gold prices have gone up. But if we start going into a lower rate environment here, like back half, if Powell actually holds to what he's saying, and we're going to start seeing interest rate cuts in the back half of this year, maybe, you know, the miners start to perk up a bit. I mean, this is kind of an interest rate. It's a sneaky interest rate sensitive play, too. Like, you don't think about the miners as interest rate sensitive stocks, but they kind of are, to your point. Like, it's expensive to pull all that stuff out of the ground. And if you've got, you know, people wanting more, the wages increase, and obviously, you know, interest rates and financing costs are higher, it gets a little bit tougher environment. So maybe the environment's going to get easier for these things.
Yeah, for sure. And it will be for everybody, though, right? Once they start cutting, it's going to get, you know, cheaper to get that money. And some areas don't really need it. They've already got the free cash flows going. But for these, you know, late, you know, really heavy, intensive areas like energy, like the miners, anything on the industrial side where you have to manufacture and put a lot of money into facilities, or, you know, the mines and the labor costs, any of those are going to benefit. So, yeah, you can see it kind of if you look on the industrial side in Fastenal, that stock's at new highs, ticker FAST.
Yeah,
nuts and bolts. You know, that's just been a juggernaut for, you know, 20, 30 years now. But it's really taken off during this rally because it's anticipating that the manufacturing and the construction side is really going to be booming, you know, later this year into 2025.
All right. We've been on the line with Tracy Raniak following value stocks over there at Zacks Research. Great information, as always, Tracy. And I know we're not in the basketball tournament, but we are in the Frozen Four in hockey. So
we are. And we beat our nemesis.
Yes. We actually smoked them. It was 2-2, and then we scored three straight goals. So that was always good. But thanks again, Tracy. We'll be down the up next quarter.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tracy.
Yeah, actually, Michigan had four teams in the tournament this year between Michigan, Michigan State, Michigan Tech, and
Western.
There you go. Thank you, Joel. Coming in on the assist there, the hockey assist. All right. We do have a few headlines to get to.
Spinoffs.
Let's talk. Okay. Let's do spinoff first. All right. So we have Triple M, 3M. Well, there's a few different headlines with 3M this morning. So 3M did complete its spinoff of Solventum. This was their healthcare play. And there was another headline that 3M settled with public water suppliers to address PFAS in drinking waters, received final court approval. So the PFAS, these are like forever chemicals, ones that don't go away and not what you want in drinking water.
Holy, they get sued by everyone.
Right.
3M just gets sued by everyone. This one wasn't even on my radar. You know, we hear about the earplugs, but I mean, this is like not even on the radar. Another lawsuit. I didn't even know they were being sued for this.
Yeah, well, I don't know if this is so. As previously disclosed, 3M recorded an accrual of $10.3 billion for this matter. So, I mean, 3M's got it. Like, they just set aside like half their profits to deal with lawsuits. I mean, that's basically the company, you know, that's what they've been doing. But again, the spinoff completed of Solventum. What is Solventum?
The adjusted. Ticker? So if you're trading it, you're, you know, trading the arbitrage here. So the adjusted close on 3M, it's a funky one. It's 88.68. So it's actually trading higher after the spinoff here. So Solventum, at least that's what my system's telling me. I didn't verify this. So, you know, you may want to verify that on your own as well, because these spinoffs get confusing. But my trading system is telling me the adjusted close is 88.68 for 3M, meaning 3M is up 3%. And then Solventum, which is obviously becoming public, the adjusted close on this is 69.55. So it's actually trading right flat right now because, So, and you can see what's happened here. This is that the last couple of days of trading in Solventum. So some of these things trade, you know, before they're actually spun. They go when issued. I don't know if this was when issued or what it was.
Man.
But
wow, 96. I mean,
is that right?
I mean, it's right. I'm saying it's right because I have it on my chart, but
I don't have anything for Solvent.
I have no idea. Yeah, this. Yeah,
so I'm not. I don't know if to verify that either. I wasn't watching it, but I know some of these do trade before they spin. They trade when issued. I'm not sure if this one did or not because I wasn't following the story closely enough. And all I'm telling you is just from my system here. It's telling me the close on Solventum was 69.55 and 3M's close is 88.68 for the adjustment. Okay. So that's what it's telling me. Usually it's right.
There was another company too involved in this, Forever Chemicals lawsuit. It was DuPont. DuPont. I think. Let's see if DuPont is moving based on that this morning as well. I think they were basically just like finalizing the deals of that. I think probably most of that was priced in. So you're seeing 3M stock moving more about that spinoff than the other headline that we talked about with the PFAS. But either way, I mean, when is 3M basically going to the best job in the country, or at least maybe one of the most lucrative, has to be being a lawyer for 3M?
Because I know
always in
always lawsuits. In trouble.
Yep. Yeah. Real quick, because we only got 4 minutes left of the show. Some other top headlines. FedEx has been working with the USPS for 22 years. USPS is the largest customer for FedEx's air-based express segment. That relationship is ending after the two companies. I don't know if you can call USPS a company. After the two organizations couldn't agree on new terms. Now the USPS is going with UPS.
Wow.
To do that air segment. UPS trading up on the news. FedEx trading down on the news. I don't know exactly like what the deals or the terms were that they couldn't agree on, FedEx and USPS. But either way, I mean, this could be a nice little driver for UPS. They're bringing in some nice government contract money. Those are always good because once you have the contract, I mean, we just saw the one end with FedEx, but they typically don't, just switch year after year. Like it's going to probably be a big contract for a while for UPS.
So, and it's funny, the trading of these two stocks. So FedEx down 1.81%. That money going directly into UPS is trading up 1.76%. Rarely do you see it work that well. But what obviously is FedEx losses, UPS's gain. UPS got hit on their earnings report. The dip has been bought, and it's getting bought here more. I don't know if it's going to be able to fill the gap here or not, when it's going down. But obviously, UPS got dinged and is coming back here. And FedEx went the opposite direction on their report. So you got this news, I'd be somewhat cautious just automatically, fading this. This could actually have follow through here.
Yeah, big dip on that. Was it earnings or was it like a guidance when that was it was they, traded?
They announced financial like guidance for 2025. It was like a whole. I just remember thinking it was interesting. I was like, they're not even talking about this year. They're talking about already next year. And I guess the market didn't like it, whatever they were saying. So for whatever reason, UPS was trying to predict exactly what their business was going to look like, 12 months from now, which to me, it seems like, especially in that business, hard to do. Because how do you know how many goods and stuff you're going to be shipping?
Yeah, it's really hard.
If we could have a recession, we could have a booming economy. You don't know. But either way, UPS did put that out there. Maybe they were just trying to tamper expectations. But yeah, that was the big sell-off a few weeks ago. All right, we're coming up on 9 a.m.
Just one more story stock today. If you're trading AT&T, there was a data breach here over the weekend. The stock is trading down 2% here in the pre-market. It was showing life, and typically when I've traded these data breaches before, unless it's really significant, usually they are buying opportunities. It was breaking out before. I expect buyers to come in here in the 17 area on AT&T.
Yeah, that was over the weekend. They had multiple buyers between the $16.80 and $17 level. This data breach was from 2019. So,
they're talking about an old one.
Yeah, 5 years ago. So, old news hitting the tape now, but I guess some Social Security numbers and private data was shared, but you're hearing about it now. So, I don't know what the material effect will be on it.
Yeah. I don't know. Did AT&T trade lower a few? There was like, it was in February, like around February 20th, their whole like service went down. And I was traveling that day. So I was at the
airport. Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
I don't know if the stock got hit on that. But again, I mean, like, seems like AT&T's, it's such a big network. I mean, you're probably going to run into some of these issues, but either way, I mean, that was crazy to me because I was like thinking in my head, I was like, what if this lasts long? Like, people are going to freak out. Like, you can't get on your phone to do any. I was like trying to Uber. My phone wouldn't work. I had a flight to catch. I didn't know what I was going
to
do.
You know what it's like now to have Rogers. When we have these Rogers outages, not for like a couple hours, but for 2 days. Yeah. You're spoiled over there with AT&T. You guys complain about a couple hours. How long was it out for?
Yeah, just a couple hours, I think. But yeah. it was
Rogers
really...
was 2 days for a lot of people. And I honestly think, you know, just trashing Rogers here, I've got Rogers, but I honestly think the network's never been the same since that whatever happened at Rogers. They never really told us when they were out for 2 days. But I feel like, you know, when I go certain areas, I'm like, I don't feel like I have the service that I used to.
What's the symbol?
I feel like it's not as good. RCI. Yeah. But Canada's basically got Bell, Rogers, and TELUS. I mean, that's really where you're at. And in certain areas, like, I mean, you got like, you know, like for internet connections here coming in, I've got Rogers. You know, that's what comes on my street, you know, as like wired connections here. So it's like you don't have a hell of a lot of choice. Cell phone providers, there's some smaller ones too. But even the smaller ones, you go in, it'll be owned by Rogers. You know, like they think you're getting something else like Fido. Oh, yeah, okay, well, I'm with Fido. I'm not with Rogers. No, you're with Rogers. Fido, Rogers owns Fido, or they've got the networking. You know, they're basically Rogers and Bell are the two majors in Canada. We need more competition. Bring AT&T in here. Help us out. They won't allow it in Canada.
All right, coming up on the end of the show here, Joel, who do we have coming on with us tomorrow?
Well, it's T3 Tuesday, so not sure. Red Dog hasn't been on in a couple of weeks. I know he did some traveling, so new quarter. Hopefully we'll get some thoughts from Red Dog.
Got it. Well, if you guys watch other Benzinga shows, you know my man, Zunaid. We are doing an NFL draft event because the NFL draft will be later this month in downtown Detroit, right next to our office building, right outside this window behind me. Zunaid filmed a nice little video, so we're going to go ahead and play that for you guys if you guys are interested in the event. Let's go ahead and see what Zunaid has to say.
We're calling all NFL diehard fans around the world. We want you. Here's what's going down. This year's NFL draft is in Detroit, but not just that, it's in the backyard of our headquarters. This is how close we are to the action. So to celebrate this, we're gonna have a stream, a watch party, and we want diehard fans from each team to get involved. You get to tell us who you think your favorite NFL team should draft in front of thousands of viewers. So if you're interested, comment and let us know which team you wanna represent for this upcoming NFL draft.
All right, so if you guys are, like Zunaid said, a diehard fan of an NFL team and you want to come hang out with us at Benzinga again.
Hang out on live stream. What, on live stream? We're not going to be flying you in from wherever.
Well, no, but if they want to.
That's not on the budget. But, you know, for example, if you're from Atlanta, Georgia, and you think you're an Atlanta Falcons expert, you'll be able to come on for 5 minutes before the pick. Talk about what you think, and then you'll be on for 5 minutes after the pick. We're also going to have some special kind of financial sports guest analysts join us as well. I'll be hosting it along with Zunaid and good old Chris Catchy will be joining us for that as well. And we are going to throw AB to the dogs. We are going to put AB in the middle of the draft, if we can do that. I'm not sure what to talk to the NFL, but we'll be getting people's outside reactions to that. So that's going to be Thursday night, April 25th. We're going to be on for 3+ hours. Wow. We won't have Triple D coming on talking about the Argonauts, but there are...
not allowed. Yep, no CFL talk.
Yeah, no CFL talk. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I mean, there's going to be thousands of people coming in town for the draft. I've never, you know, experienced anything like that. You know, I've never been to an NFL draft before, so I'm amped up about it. Detroit Lions, I mean, there's so much excitement around the team right now. So the Lions fans, we know they'll be out in full force. I'm excited to see what other teams travel the best. I'm going to guess the Chicago Bears fans because they've got the first pick, Caleb Williams, and, you know, it's somewhat close to Detroit. So we should see a lot of Bears fans as well. But yeah, we'll keep you guys updated on that. More information as we get closer to that event. Make sure to hang out with us that night on the stream. Or if you want to come in town, like I said, we are going to be doing some in-person stuff as well. But all right, guys, that'll be a wrap on today's show. We'll see you guys tomorrow morning, 8 a.m.